there, and thanks for listening to our second Adulting is Easy podcast. My name is Lauren, and I manage the Adulting is Easy blog and website. I'm joined again today by my little sister, Jenny, this time with a little change of venue. We're at my house instead of my parents this time.
It's a little quieter here. Hi, I'm Jenny. I'm a high schooler, and my sister and I are 13 years apart, so she's been down the road here with all the adulting, and I'm here to learn from her.
Yep, so our goal today is to make adulting a bit easier for Jenny here and all of you listeners by explaining a personal finance topic to her, since managing money is a big part of adulting. Today, specifically, we're going to discuss how the typical American manages their money. Then we'll transition to a few easy ways to save for retirement. You ready?
All right, let's get rolling.
That sounds good. All right, so first, I'm going to tell you about how Americans handle savings and debt. So first topic then is emergency savings. Jenny, do you know how much money adults should have set aside for emergencies?
I have no idea.
Well, that's what the point of this is, right? So general guidelines suggest having 3 to 6 months of expenses saved. So if a family spends, say, $5,000 per month, they should have between $15,000 and $30,000 set aside for emergencies.
Sounds like a lot.
It does sound like a lot. But that's like in case somebody loses their job and they still don't have to change their life while they're looking for another one or something like that. They can still pay for their house. They can still make their car payments and things like that. So do you have a guess, Jenny, for what percent of Americans have less than $1,000 set aside?
Less than $1,000? Mm-hmm. I'm going to say 25%.
More than half of Americans
have
less than $1,000 in savings.
That's insane.
And remember, what did we just say, right? They should have at least tens of thousands, right? And they, you know, more than half have less than one. Moving from emergency savings, then let's talk about credit cards. We talked about credit last week. We didn't really talk too much about credit cards specifically. Do you have a guess for what percent of Americans have some kind of credit card debt that they're carrying?
I'm going to go with a whopping 70%.
70? That's pretty high. Actually, it's 38% of Americans have credit card debt. And the average balance on those credit cards is
$16,000. $16,000?
Right. So imagine if they would have had the 15 to 30 or whatever thousand emergency fund they're supposed to have.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have needed that credit card debt probably. Oh, here's a fun fact for you. 21% of Americans have more credit card debt than emergency savings, right? How about a guess for the average interest rate on credit cards?
Interest rate? 5%? What?
So a mortgage or sometimes a car payment would be around 4 or 5%. According Ooh. To WalletHub, credit cards, 19.21%.
That's so high.
That's so high. And that's one of the reasons you want to have an emergency fund is so that you don't turn to credit in those scenarios, right? Turn to credit card debt. So 19.21%. For fun here, let's pretend, Jenny, that you're fresh out of college and you're headed to your first full-time job. You know you're going to need some clothes for the office. And so you go ahead and charge $1,000 on a credit card okay. to buy those clothes. Gotta look nice, right? $1,000 sounds like a lot, but it's probably, you know, a good bunch of outfits. Good thing to get started. So if you assume a 19% interest rate and you pay only the minimum balance every month, it would take you 115 months to pay that off. And you'd pay $989 in interest on that $1,000. That's like double, right?
How do you avoid that?
Well, emergency savings, pretty much. So that's just to illustrate a little bit about the importance of emergency savings and why you don't really want to use credit cards. But a lot of Americans do. Moving to student loans. Are your friends, Jenny, or do you ever hear about people talking about student loans?
Yeah, all the time. Not in high school, of course, but college, I hear it a lot.
Yeah, so what are people saying?
It seems like it's being a bigger issue now, like today, than it was in the past. Like, it's getting worse.
Yes, there's definitely a lot of student loan debt out there. Now, before we get into some statistics on student loans, I just want to note that student loans are not inherently bad, especially if they help the student get a better degree from a better school than they otherwise would have gotten. Makes sense, right? That should theoretically allow them to get paid more throughout their career than had they done something differently.
So you think it's worth the cost to some point?
It absolutely can be. You're making an investment in yourself, and that can pay you back. There can be a return on that investment, literally in dollar form. So there's a book, it's sitting right here in front of us, Jen, called Your Money Ratios, 8 Simple Tools for Financial Security. And this book says that a good rule of thumb for the loan amount on student loans, not to exceed 75% of the average salary for the first 10 years after you get the degree. So let's say you are going to graduate school, you're going to go get a master's degree, and you're going to take out some debt to do that because you think when you get that degree, you're going to make $100,000 a year on average for the next 10 years. That would mean that your loan amount should not exceed 75% of that, or $75,000. Okay. Does that make sense? So it's just kind of a rule of thumb that tells you student loans, not all bad, but they can be. If you take out a student loan and you don't graduate, that's probably the worst thing you can do. Or if you take out a student loan for something that maybe you could have gone to a less expensive school and gotten a similar degree with a similar similar job coming out. So here's some statistics on student loans. And Jen, this is why you're hearing more about it than you ever have. There are $1.56 trillion in total U.S. student debt. 44.7 million Americans have student loan debt. 11.5% of student loans are 90 days or more delinquent or in total default. The average monthly student loan payment among those that are not in deferment is $393.
Why is it like that? Why is it like that? Why is it at that point that everything just, the money just...
Well, some of that has to do with the recession. A lot of people went to school longer during that time. There was also my generation, who are the millennials, right? You're Gen Z. But millennials were told, you know, desk jobs are good jobs. Go to college to get a good job. And it really ended up kind of backfiring in the sense that people went to college at no matter what the cost, whether they could really afford it or not. And so that's part of the reason we are where we are. Obviously, the Great Recession also set people back in terms of what kind of jobs they got and their buying power. And so it's been harder for them to pay those back. So moving then from, we talked about emergency savings, we talked about credit cards, we talked a bit about student loans. Oh, and those statistics, by the way, were from LendingTree there and the student loans. Let's talk about car loans, auto loans. They're becoming an increasingly bigger percentage of American debt. 8% of Americans' debt is now for their car. So the average payments, maybe I'll have you take a guess at this one. We were just talking about the student loans average about $400 a month. What do you think the average payment on a new car is?
Like monthly?
Monthly, yeah.
I'm gonna be so off though. Like 200?
A little off. 580.
What?
Average for a new car. Used car? You have a guess?
200.
380.
A little closer.
So the average payments, the loan amounts, and the loan term, that's the length, have all been increasing over time. So the average loan amount on a car is $30,000. That's what they borrow. That's not the price of the car. And the loan term is 68.5 months. That's how long it takes to pay a car back.
68?
Yes, and a half months. That's like going on 6 years. Right? Pretty crazy. So interest rates, we talked about them for a second. They vary a lot on auto loans. It's usually 3-10%. But I was talking to a family member of my husband's recently, and she's really young, just out of school, you know, was in a pinch, needed a car. Her interest rate on her car is 18%.
18%?
On a car, yes. Eric's other cousin's loan, I think it's 7%. So not as bad. But yeah, 3 to 10% is about what you're looking at for a typical car loan.
Didn't Eric have interest on his 4Runner for a while
then? Yeah, he did. It was, I think, like 2.75.
Oh. Something like that. So, like, not bad at all.
No, it was pretty low. And he made double payments to pay it off kind of quickly, so not too bad. So, as a side note, just for the listeners, there is a blog on realadultingiseasy.com called Repossession Recession, which talks a lot more about car loans and how those are becoming increasingly a part of American life. All right, so lastly, we talked about how Americans handle a lot of their finances. Let's talk about retirement. So 1/3 of Americans have zero saved for retirement. Nothing at all. A little more than half, 56%, have $10,000 saved. And these are sobering statistics when you consider that you may need about $2 million to retire.
So does this mean people just work like the rest of their lives? Like they just can't retire. So where does that leave them?
Yeah. Work till you die. Right? Work till you can't work anymore. And then you just live in government provided housing, I guess.
What a shame.
Well, that's part of the reason we're doing this podcast is so that people can understand what the deal is. And maybe they can start saving. Even a little bit helps. We'll talk about retirement. I've got a couple of ways that people can start saving now. Just to wrap that up, the Your Money Ratios book here tells us that we're going to need 12 times our salary saved when we're 65 to retire. Another estimate I've heard is 25 times what you need to live off of. Jeez. So, and remember, half have 10,000 and a third have zero.
A whole third have nothing.
Nothing. What do you have?
I have all my paychecks saved. I haven't spent a penny for what I've worked with. Like,
is it in a retirement account?
It is not. It's in my checkings.
All right. Well, let's talk about retirement. And before we dive a little deeper into retirement here, I just want to add a couple of caveats and disclaimers. First of all, you need to pay off your high interest debt, like your credit cards, before you start saving for retirement in earnest. Then you should create that emergency fund that we talked about. Get at least 1 to 3 months set aside. Ideally, most sources tell you you're going to need 3 to 6, but that's up to you. Also, you can start saving, can and really should start saving for retirement while you're paying on your student loans as well. It's okay to do both. So, and remember, Your Money Ratio says we need 12 times our salary, at least. So I'm going to go over basically three different ways to save for retirement. This is based on what our dad told me to do when I was starting out. So I'm going to pass that information to you now.
Awesome.
He'd be okay. So proud. Wonder if he's listening. Hi, Dad. So the first is it's a 401k. And I'm going to read the definition from Investopedia here. A 401k plan is a tax-advantaged defined contribution retirement account offered by many employers to their employees. It is named after a section of the U.S. IRS code. Workers can make contributions to their 401k accounts through automatic payroll withholding, and their employers can match some or even all of those contributions. So the investment earnings in a traditional 401k plan are not taxed until the employee withdraws the money, which would typically be after retirement. So it's kind of a long-winded way to say your job can take a portion of your salary, whatever portion you decide on, and invest that for you. Some employers even match some of it. So at my job, I put 10% aside, and my company that I work for will match 10% of that. So think about it like this. I put 10% in, and my employer puts 1% in.
And it's never taxed?
It's taxed when you retire, and it's taxed as income at that point.
Okay.
So once you have a job that offers a 401k, Jen, I would highly recommend that you immediately enroll in it. Imagine if the company is going to match 3%, right? Once you contribute 3%, that would be 100% return on your money. You put in some, and they put all of that in also. So whatever they're going to match, I would definitely contribute. I think Dad's company does either the first 3% or the first 6%. They just match.
Oh, okay.
But even if you don't, even if they don't match, I would suggest that you still contribute, because it's pre-tax money for now. You're kicking the tax can down the road, which is pretty much always a good idea.
So you don't want to pass up that opportunity.
No. So imagine if you make $40,000 and say you put $1,000 in your 401k, you're only taxed on $39,000 that year.
Okay.
See how that works? So, and when you go to start contributing to your 401k, there will be basically a list for you to choose from to, where you want to invest your money. There could be, you know, I started off on a broad market mutual fund is where I put all of it. So it can seem really daunting. I was just talking to somebody that I work with now about this, you know, how much is 5%? How much is 4%? I mean, contribute even 1%. To get started. And then every time you get a raise, say you get a 3% raise, up it another percent, up it to 2, right? You're still getting a raise, mm-hmm. right? And every time you get a raise, just up it another percent. That was some advice that Dad gave me years ago now. So again, you're going to get taxed when you take the money out for retirement. However, you're not making a lot of money in retirement, so your tax rate should be lower than when you're working. It's also, when you're putting that money into the 401k, it's earning money, right? And you're not paying taxes on any of that either until later. So it's a good way to basically borrow money from the government for 30 years. And in 2020, next year, the max you'll be able to put in, you are capped at
$19,500.
Okay. Yep, that's the most you can put in. Any reactions to 401ks?
Wait, so what's the cap now? Does it fluctuate?
I think it's 19 right now.
Oh, okay. So it's going up.
It goes up. Oh. Yes. It was 9. It's 19 this year. I think it was 18 last year. So, cool. Yep, it goes up. All right, so the next one is called a Roth IRA. And as soon as you're earning taxable income, I would suggest that you open a Roth IRA retirement account. You contribute to Roth IRAs. Remember, 401ks, your employer is basically going to take that money out of your paycheck and invest that and match it. A Roth IRA, you're going to do it. It's not an employer-sponsored plan. And you're going to take money that you've paid taxes on, that's basically in your checking account, and you're going to put it in a Roth IRA. And the idea here is to do this when you're young and not making as much money as you will be later. So think about it this way. It's better to contribute post-tax when, say you're making $35,000 now. You're paying a 12% tax rate. It's better to pay that tax now rather than maybe years down the line when you're paying you're making $90,000 and you're paying 24% in taxes, right? Mm-hmm. Your tax rate's going to be lower now, so you pay it, get the taxes out of the way, and then that money grows for your whole life. And you can take it out, and you've already paid taxes on it, okay? So between the 401k and the Roth IRA, you're kind of getting, you have the deferred tax account and then the one that you're paying taxes on now. Does that make sense?
Okay. Life hacks.
Kind of. So the cool thing about Roth IRAs is that money is going to earn interest for decades. So the 2020, what you can put in is $6,000 into a Roth IRA. And that $6,000 is going to earn some money, right? And then that money, that interest that it earned, is going to earn more. And then that's going to earn more. And then that's going to earn more. That's going to happen for decades. You're not going to have to pay taxes on it because you already did. So that's kind of the beauty of a Roth IRA. Another benefit, and I would advise against this, but another benefit is that you can take the principal out. So if you put, say, $6,000 in, you could take that out later without any penalties. So one thing to note about retirement accounts, that 401k, Roth IRA, you can't start taking the money out until you're 59 and a half without penalties.
Okay.
So until your dad's age, basically. And you have to start taking money out at 70 and a half.
So what do you mean by penalties? Like, you have to pay more to take it out?
So with a Roth IRA, you can take the principal out. with a 401k, if you want to take money out before you're 59 and a half, you pay taxes on it, right? Because you never paid taxes before, and a 10% penalty.
10%.
It's pretty hefty. Yeah. Not advisable. Something that you can do with a 401k is you can actually borrow money from yourself and pay yourself back 7% interest. Also not a good idea. Because you want that money in your retirement account.
I was like, what? You can, like, pay yourself?
Yes. You want that money in your retirement account earning money. Okay? That's what it comes down to. You shouldn't have to borrow against your 401k unless something bad happens. Okay. And if you don't, if you have an emergency fund, like we talked about, you shouldn't need to do that. So, let's see. All right. So that's Roth IRAs. There's also something called a Roth 401k. And this is something that I have not been offered in my employment life. So I'm going to head over to Investopedia once more. A Roth 401k is an employer-sponsored investment savings account that is funded with after-tax dollars up to the plan's contribution limit. This type of investment account is well-suited for people who think they will be in a higher tax bracket in retirement than they are now, as withdrawals are tax-free. So we just talked about the Roth IRA, right? Not an employer-sponsored thing. Something that you're going to basically do yourself. The Roth 401k is kind of like a Roth IRA, but it is employer-sponsored, is what it comes down to. I don't know. I haven't had experience with them specifically. That's a relatively new thing, I think. So any comments on 401ks, Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks?
So Roth IRAs, it's not through the employer.
Mm-hmm.
It's your own, like, personal thing. But then you said with... what was the retirement account we talked about first? The
401k.
That can be through your company, right?
That's employer sponsored. Okay, that's through your company. And then a Roth 401k kind of is like a Roth IRA and a 401k and a baby.
Okay. I just wanted to differentiate between those two.
Yep. So we're going to cover one more thing then, which I think is a really good way to save for retirement. And this is another thing that Dad taught me. So we're going to talk about health savings accounts. And these are not actually retirement accounts, but they can be a retirement gift from heaven.
Oh.
Let me tell you why. No taxes when you put the money in. No taxes on the growth. And no taxes when you take it out.
But? Is there a but coming on?
There is. So the only catch, the only catch is that you have to use it for approved medical expenses.
Okay.
And there's a pretty serious list. Like, hearing aids are on it. I think sunscreen's on it. Band-aids. Doctor's appointments. Chiropractor. There's a pretty broad list of things you can use it for. Also, you don't have to wait until retirement to use it. You can use it anytime. It's just a really great way to not pay taxes on something and have it invested for a very long time because...
And there's never any penalties.
Nope. So... One of the stats that I saw was that when you're retired, medical expenses could be 25% of your expenses. So that's one reason to have some money set aside for medical bills anyways, right? There's also a lot of estimates that say that couples will need $200,000. They'll have $200,000 in medical bills in retirement. So why not put it in this health savings account? So I would suggest when you start working... And you have health insurance, because I think you can stay on mom and dad's till you're 26. You should enroll in that. The 2020 max for the HSA for individuals is $3,550.
Can you repeat that number?
$3,550. I think it pretty much goes up $50 every year.
Okay.
So one thing to note here, HSAs, those health savings accounts, are sometimes confused with flexible spending accounts. HSAs, these health savings accounts, these are things that are offered to you if you are on a high deductible health plan through your health insurance. Flexible spending accounts are offered with a lot of different insurance plans. But the difference with a flexible spending account, it's still pre-tax dollars, your company, right? Like much like we were talking about with your 401k, they take some money out, they put it in your 401k. They can also take some money out and put it in a flex spending account for you. Actually, there's a couple different ways you can do it, but let's just say that's the way it happens. The difference is that if you don't use those funds in that year or very short time after the end of the year, you lose them. It's not like a health savings account. So flex spending, different than health savings account. So How do you feel, Jen? Do you know what you want to do when you start working, saving for retirement?
I'm a little worried, but hopefully I'm not part of that 33% that doesn't have any in the retirement account.
Exactly. You won't be for long. Not with me as your sister. So
yeah, you'll keep an eye on me.
So one thing to kind of close on here, regardless of any of our individual financial situations, we can all work together to spread the word about the importance of financial literacy. Mm-hmm. If people just knew even what we just talked about, I think that 33% number would go down quite a bit. Millennials, especially my generation, were falling behind on retirement savings. Increasing numbers of American seniors are living in poverty. You asked what happens? What are these people planning? They don't have a plan. They think they're going to work until they possibly can, and then they get sick and they end up living in poverty because they don't have enough savings. And education, I really believe educating and understanding some of these simple financial concepts is really the path to slowing down these trends. Jen, now you know about how Americans handle money and how you can be different by saving for retirement. What do you think was the most interesting thing you learned today? Was it that 33% of people have nothing?
It definitely was. But like you said, millennials, they need to know where they're headed with their money. But now Generation Z is up and coming, mm-hmm. So got to be prepared.
Yes, both of our generations need to get their stuff together. But what we have that the older generations don't have on our side is time. And time is what you need to let that money grow and work for you. So you can find the sources from this podcast in the Adulting is Easy blogs, How Bad Are Americans with Their Money? And Three Ways to Start Saving for Retirement, which were both posted in June at realadultingiseasy.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at adultingiseasy, and you can even email us at realadultingiseasy@gmail.com.
If you like our show or the website and you want to support us, you can donate at patreon.com/adultingiseasy as well. That's new this week. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Hopefully we've made adulting a little easier for you.